This week, April 7th, 2015, on The Digital Story. Street photography ethics with Gordon Lewis. Travel photography in London with David Hobby. Meet Photo. All this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have an amazing interview for you today with street photographer Gordon Lewis, who actually has a new book out too. Pretty cool stuff, and we'll get to that after the weekly update. Have three weekly update stories for you, and then I have a fantastic screening room with David Hobby, who is in London. All of that great content in today's show. So let's get started with the weekly update. Weekly update. All right, I don't know how to say this. It's spelled P-H-H-H-O-T-O. So I'll just say photo. How's that sound? Meet photo. Anyway, enough of that. So this is from F-Stoppers, and I'm just going to read you what they say, and then I'll say a few words about it. If you hadn't heard of the app Photo, you're currently not alone. Photo is a mobile GIF / cinemagraph / image sequence creating and sharing platform that was released last year on iOS, and it will be coming to Android in the future. As of this week, it now has over 1 million registered users and is really starting to take the world by storm. So, of course, I had to go over and see what this was all about. So I downloaded the app onto my iPhone, and it is P-H-H-H-O-T-O. That's what you're looking for. And it is actually kind of cool. I'm glad I found out about this. Essentially, what it does is it allows you to create a cinemagraph with your iPhone very easily. What that means is that it's a picture that has some movement. So everything that you look at, and it feels like Instagram in the sense that it has a feed and, you know, you have friends and followers and all that kind of stuff. It is kind of cool because as you go through the different images posted, people have found creative ways to apply this cinemagraph approach by having things kind of move. And sometimes they just move very basically. Like my first one that I did, I'm on there, by the way, as Derek Story, D-E-R-R-I-C-K-S-T-O-R-Y. I just held the phone and photographed a bunch of the fine art greeting cards I just made for the Cuba Cars project. And so what the application did was it took that and it kind of created some movement, like they're sort of dancing on the table there. And I didn't do anything. I just pointed the iPhone to it. I focused and I recorded it, and then the app did the rest. So then I'm thinking, wow, if I planned a little bit, some kind of cool movement during the recording sequence of something, then I could make a really neat cinemagraph also. And that's what this thing's all about. So you're just scrolling through it and you're looking at some of the stuff that other people have done. You can create your own stuff. It's yet another way to pass away minutes that you probably don't have to spare. However, that being said, I'm not one of those people who, at least anymore, are going to say, oh no, another social networking app. Because you know what? There are so many delays in life that I like having these things to make those delays feel useful. So when I'm standing in the line at the drugstore for 15 minutes, well, now I have another thing to do during that time so that when I get up there, I'm in a happy mood and not a cranky mood. So there are some advantages to these things for photographers. So anyway, again, it's for iOS only. It's called Photo, P-H-H-H-O-T-O. It's coming to Android. If you're interested in it, I have the link to the F-Stoppers article, or you can just download it yourself and take a look. And if you want to hook up with me on Photo, I'm there as Derek Story. All right. In other news, well, I think probably the big hardware announcement last week was the Nikon One J5. And DP Review did a nice little blurb on it. And I quote, "The Nikon One J5 has been announced as the latest member of Nikon's mirrorless lineup. It offers a more traditional shape and feel with a contoured grip and secondary command dial. Its 1-inch type 20.8 megapixel CMOS sensor, which does not have an anti-aliasing filter, offers a boost in resolution over its predecessor, and it is also capable of 4K video capture at 15 frames per second. Side note there, I don't think you should be able to say it's capable of 4K video capture if it's at 15 frames per second. Just saying. Okay, anyway, back to the copy here. Intact from the previous model is a 171-point hybrid AF system with 105 phase detection points. That's 105 phase detection points. Also included is built-in Wi-Fi with NFC. The Nikon One J5 will be available in late April in several kit options. And this is what kind of interests me, this first one here. With the One Nikkor 10-30mm f3.5-5.6 zoom for $499.95, or you can get it with the 30-110mm zoom for $749, or the 10-100mm zoom for $1,049. But this kit, now we're away from the copy and onto my lovely prose here. This kit that with the 10 to 30, 3.5 to 5.6 zoom for $499.95, that is pretty cool. I have to say, that is pretty cool. So I took a closer look at the camera because the price point caught my eye, thinking, wow, a nice 1-inch sensor, 20 megapixels. The design of the J5 is probably the best of the Nikon ones I've seen. It just looks more enthusiast than the other ones. The other ones just look so snapshooter. It was hard to get crazy about them. This one actually has a bit of an enthusiast feel to it, has a few more controls. It looks good. And then at $499 for the entry point, I thought, well, this is going to be an interesting one to follow. I wanted to make sure that it was on your radar if you're out there shopping for mirrorless. There's a lot of competition in this particular neck of the woods. However, I think the Nikon One J5 just gave itself a bit more of a chance with this latest release. All right, and finally, I told you we had three weekly updates today. Issue 19 of CT Digital Photography is out. Now, of course, this is a project that's near and dear to my heart, being I'm an associate editor for the North American version. But this latest issue, I just wanted to give you some of the topics here, and then I have a special offer for you. So it's all good. It's all good. So in-depth articles include, and when I say in-depth for CT Digital Photography Magazine, I mean in-depth. I don't mean one or two pages. I mean multiple pages. Okay, here we go. Here are some of the topics in this issue that just came out, issue 19. Stills from 4K video. Is this, and I'm talking now, this isn't part of the list. Is this something that's reasonable, pulling stills out of 4K video? We've sort of have heard that this is a holy grail for still photography. You just shoot at 30 frames per second and pull out the one that you want, and you've got like an 8 megapixel shot. Is this a reasonable approach? And if so, how do you do it so you get the best quality? That article is in this issue. Yes. Samsung NX1, which is their new flagship model, versus the Canon 7D Mark II. Another in-depth report. That is a pretty cool comparison. The NX1 versus the 7D Mark II. How to digitize slides. Yeah, I mean, we as in anyone that's probably older than 30 has slides hanging around somewhere. I have a whole bunch of them. I have a lot of great shots on slides that I'm not doing anything with because I haven't digitized them. Here's an article about doing that and about some of the best options for doing that. Another article, 10 shoe mount flashes compared. You want to know how these things stack up? This is the article for you. And everything you need to know about food photography, which isn't something that you just wander into. Hey, I'm going to do some food photography today. That's not the way it works. It's kind of its own thing. And this article will tell you what you need to know. Now, here's the offer. This is for our podcast listeners only. We get 30% off the subscription price. That's 40% off the newsstand until April 13th. So you got a week if you want to take advantage of this. 30% off the subscription price, 40% off the newsstand. I have the link in the show notes, the full link. All you got to do is click on it and take you right to the page. I can give it to you here, but you're not going to remember it if you're driving. I'll tell you anyway. http://bit.ly/ds1530. All right. So for those of you with a photographic memory, you can do that. You can just go that. Or you can go to the show notes and click on the link and it'll take you there. 30% off, 40% off the newsstand price. Get it for a week. Do it now. Don't delay. This is really a quality publication. All right, and that is this week's weekly update. Story number one, street photography ethics with Gordon Lewis. So I connected with Gordon on Skype. He's in Philadelphia, and I'm here in Santa Rosa. And we had this great talk about street photography. It's actually been one of the most enjoyable conversations I've had on this topic. I just love his approach. I love his thinking. We talk about legal stuff. We talk about ethics. We talk about model releases. We talk about don't be creepy. We cover all that stuff. So I'm not gonna give it away. I'm just going to turn it right over to the interview, and then I'll be back afterwards. I'm here with Gordon Lewis, who is a photographer and an author, and we're going to talk a little bit about street photography ethics today. But before we do that, I'd like Gordon to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about how long you've been shooting and how you got into street photography, and then we'll meander into ethics from there. Gordon, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've been into photography since I was in high school, and I just liked taking pictures of my classmates. I went to high school in northern Arizona, but I'm originally from Los Angeles, so when I was there, I would just be taking pictures on the streets, and I wasn't really conscious that I was doing street photography. I wasn't really aware of it as a genre until I got into college. I went to college at Harvard, so I was in the Boston-Cambridge area, which has a lot of students, a lot of foot traffic. So it was a great place for just walking outside my dorm and seeing people in life passing by. So started talking to some of my teachers who told me that what I was doing was street photography. I started saying, oh, really? Well, who else is doing this? And I found out about people like Joe Meyerowitz, Robert Frank, etc., and Cartier-Bresson, et cetera, et cetera. I just continued doing it mostly for my own pleasure. Maybe about 5 years ago, I guess, I started a blog called Shutterfinger, which was an opportunity to, you know, just share my thoughts and my photos. Shutterfinger is still up for anybody who wants to see it. Just Google Shutterfinger, one word, and you'll find it. And that's what really led to my getting an email from Rocky Nook asking me if I'd be interested in writing a book on street photography, which I did. It will be available in print form end of May. And if you just can't wait that long, you can go to Amazon and they have an ebook version available now.
And Rocky Nook has the ebook version also, don't they, for download?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can go directly through Rocky Nook, or you can go into Amazon for the Kindle version. The full title is Street Photography, The Art of Capturing the Candid Moment.
Awesome. Well, so the thing that caught my eye when I found out about you is that you're actually interested in talking about
etiquette and ethics and, you know, that aspect of street photography, which is exciting to me because it's actually hard sometimes to get street photographers to talk about this. So tell me a little bit about, you know, that side of it for you and why you find it interesting. And then we'll actually get into some of your tips and gems there.
Let's first separate ethics from legality. I mean, broadly speaking, here in the U.S. and in most Western countries, people who are out in public places, legally speaking, have no expectation of privacy, meaning that you as a photographer are free to photograph them as long as you aren't harassing anyone or you're not on private property where they can say, well, this is my property, you can't photograph here. So that sort of thing. So just generally speaking, you have the right to go out into public places and photograph people.
And we dodged a little bit of a bullet recently in Arkansas because they were set to set a precedent where that would change a little bit. And fortunately, the governor said no.
Yeah, it got to be problematic. For those of you who may not know, what the governor basically said was, well, every person has a right to their likeness. So you can't take their photograph and quote unquote exploit them. In other words, get money for having photographed them. But the law was overly broad. I mean, it basically, the way it was written, said, well, if you're a Japanese tourist and you take a picture of someone on the streets of Little Rock and it appears on the internet and that person finds out about it, they are owed compensation.
And that just wouldn't work. I mean, that if that became the norm in the U.S., that would be the end of street photography as we know it.
I've been places where the law, technically speaking, is almost as restrictive. But the practical matter is that if you're expecting visitors and tourists are going to be coming with iPhones, iPads. They're taking pictures everywhere. I mean, I've been to communist China, okay? And tourists are everywhere taking photos. Where it gets a little tricky is if authorities perceive you as being a professional or semi-professional.
Yes, yes. So this is where I'll get on my box just for a second, and then I have a couple questions for you. But this is one of the reasons why I do like the smaller, lighter cameras when I'm traveling. And I've been all over the world too, and just recently got back from Cuba, and I've noticed that when I have a smaller camera and I'm just kind of acting like a silly tourist and don't really seem to know what I'm doing, I have never attracted the attention of authorities and so forth like I would when I have my big tripod and my you know 70 to 200 Canon EF f/2.8 telephoto lens and on a 5D Mark III or something like that. So perception does help a bit in these situations, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the average person on the street may not know exactly what camera you have. It's almost universally true that the bigger the camera, the more expensive it is.
Yes.
You know, the bigger the lens, the more expensive it is. And if you've got a big camera and several big lenses and a tripod, of course people are going to be more concerned about what you're up to. I mean, they may not think that you're up to anything illegal or that you're dangerous necessarily, but it's like, well, are you working for a newspaper, a magazine? What are you doing?
Exactly, exactly. And that's exactly the radar I don't want to be on.
Right. You know.
So, the question I get asked all the time from people and in workshops and so forth is, when do I need a model release? And, you know, the first thing I always say is, well, I'm not a lawyer and I cannot dispense legal advice. And I would assume that's the same for you also, unless there's right. Something about you I don't know.
Well, so, I've read up on it.
Yeah. So, but we have a feel for the situation. So we can share what we've learned over time. And I'd be interested to hear what your spin is on the model release situation when we're out in public.
The basic idea of a model release is that it's protection for the photographer. I mean, it's funny, people think, oh, it's protection for the subject. Well, actually, it's protection for the photographer, because the idea is that you don't want someone suing you because you have used their likeness, their photo, for gain. So if you were hiring a model and you're paying this model compensation, you see what I'm saying, you would have them sign a model release in exchange for compensation, saying, I have compensated you. You are signing this model release. That's the end of it. Now, where it can get a little tricky is if you're taking pictures of people on the street and you don't have a profit motive. You're not necessarily going to put photos of them on the cover of a book or magazine. You're taking them for basically your private enjoyment, or maybe at the most, you're going to put them in a book. You're not profiting off of their individual image necessarily, although, you know, you may profit from the book itself, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
In that case, really what I find it boils down to is, if the publisher, if someone is going to publish a photo, if they ask for a model release, you need a model release. Now, you may not have gotten one, but then in that case, they're not going to publish the photo.
That's the way it's worked out for me, to tell you the truth.
Right, right.
It is, because and you never really know. I mean, it does vary from publication to publication, publisher to publisher. But yes, the bottom line has been, if someone asks for a model release, then either you provide it, or the shot doesn't get published, and it's pretty much that. That cut and dry. And, you know, more often than not, I'm not asked for model releases as much these days as I used to be. I don't know what your experience is. Isn't it all about likeness, though? We're out and about. We enjoy street photography. We're not out to do any harm. We're not paparazzi here. We're not going to be making posters and selling them at a giant retailer. We may want to put some images on our blog. We may want to put some images in an article. If we're lucky, we may want to put some images in a book, and that's pretty much the extent of it. And so in those cases, the model release, as we understand it now, isn't a big deal.
It isn't. On the other hand, you know, you have to be aware that we're in a litigious society. The rule of thumb I'd give is that if you're doing what you just described, which is what I do, I wouldn't worry about it very much. But if you have any thought that you are doing these photos to be put in a very public gallery opening, or you have distinct likenesses of people, in other words, you're doing a project. Let me give you an example, Humans of New York. This is, you're familiar with the book,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am.
He went around documenting various people in New York. And I mean, they weren't candid photos. Practically everybody's facing the camera. I don't know for a fact that he got model releases, but it would surprise me if he didn't, because these are definitely photos of individual people and he's interacting with them. He had every opportunity to ask for a model release.
And in that case, I definitely would. Same thing. If you go to a show, let's say Richard Avedon, for example, right, or something like that, where the engagement with the subjects is definitely part of the photograph, then I would get a model release. And in fact, the rule of thumb I go by, if you can get a model release, and I always have them with me, if you can, if it's convenient, get it anyway. I mean, you know, why not? Because you don't know up the road. Every time I have someone over at the studio for a shoot, whether I've hired them or they've hired me, the first thing we do is a model release before we get on with the shoot, because I don't know, you know. So
exactly.
When it's
but I can imagine. But excuse me. But I can imagine some of your listeners going, Well, how do you ask a perfect stranger for a model release?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I did this weekend project for a year where I went to the LA County Museum of Art, hung around there, took pictures of people in black and white, and made myself get a model release for every shot that I took there, you know, as part of my just practicing doing this. And I have to tell you, it was somewhat agonizing experience because it's exactly that. You're going up to perfect strangers. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the women think that, you know, maybe it's a line that you're hitting on them. And you know, parents think that, you know, that maybe you're kind of a weird person. And, you know, it goes on and on. What I found when I did it was that 9 times out of 10, people either said yes and would do it, or they would just politely refuse. No big deal, you know, either way.
You're absolutely correct. That's exactly the experience I have. It's mm-hmm. that, you know, as long as you're polite,
correct,
you're not being pushy, you're explaining your motives. I mean, what I would often say is I'm a street photographer. I take pictures of people here on the streets of Philadelphia for my own enjoyment and just to, you know, show what city life in Philly is about. Mm-hmm. I took a picture of you because whatever the truth, oh, you look kind of cool in that. Well, there was one guy, for example, he was wearing a red suit. And I said, man, I just can't help myself. I have to take a photo of him. I mean, you know, and he says, you want to take a photo of me? And I said, I know you didn't leave home in a red suit thinking that you were not going to attract attention. He laughed. and it was cool with him. And I said, look, I want to put this on my blog, you know. Is that all right with you? Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, and the nice thing these days is because we have the LCD, we can show them what a cool shot it is. We can show them what attracted us to that photo. Right.
Yeah, he can see for himself, oh, this is a flattering photo of me or whatever. Now, so far we've been talking about the legalities, but that's distinct from the ethics.
Okay, we should touch on the ethics.
Ethics, the way I basically define it, is not what's legal or not legal, but what's right or wrong. Mm. And, you know, let's face it, that's a little subjective, isn't it?
It is. My ethics start with this phrase. This is my catchphrase. Don't be creepy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, don't be creepy. and hey, the thing is, you... even that could be subjective, but I mean,
some things to my
mind are common sense. Like, okay, fine. I'm a dad. I've got 3 kids. Okay. If I go to the park with my kids, I mean, they're older now, but I'd take pictures of my kids. I wouldn't take pictures of anybody else's kids.
Agreed.
Right. Because I mean, as a parent, I wonder what the hell are you taking pictures of my kids for?
Exactly. You've just violated the creepy rule, whether you are or not. You know, it's unsettling for the parent.
Right. Now, it's different if, for example, you go to some sort of carnival or street fair and there's like 20 kids and they're all doing hula hoops.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
In that case, okay, fine. You know, it's a lot of people around. A lot of people are taking pictures. I'm not going to focus on any one particular kid. There's that. So, yeah, there's definitely creepy. Also, if you're a guy, you got to be kind of aware of how you might be perceived by the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it can be subjective. For example, I used to live in L.A. I'd go to Venice Beach. Well, it's a beach, right? And you'd see a lot of women walking up and down. It's not exactly a boardwalk, but it's similar to a boardwalk. And they'd be in bikinis, very skimpy. Do you take a picture or not? Well, I sort of feel like I'm not going to like sneak up behind somebody or, you know, take the photo in such a way that people are kind of like, what's he being so furtive about?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
But there was an occasion when I was there and there was a woman who had a very skimpy bikini. She was a tall blonde and she was walking with a black dwarf who was about, he got reached up to my waist.
How are you going to pass on that?
Exactly. Well, but I didn't want to be creepy. So I just struck up a conversation. I just said, uh-huh. Hey, you know, the Odd Couple, what are you folks out just, kicking it, you know,
uh-huh.
We start chatting a bit. And, I said, well, you know what I'm going to ask, right? And they said, nah, you know, we don't want any photos. I said, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a nice day. But you know what I'm saying? I didn't feel like I was being creepy.
Right.
And they didn't feel that way.
Yeah, and again, this is because you didn't try to sneak the photo. And I think that has a lot to do with it, which, you know, let's face it, there are all times when we shoot first and ask questions later.
Oh, right.
Because you don't want to miss the shot. And I would right. be lying if I said I don't do that too. I do it all the time.
Right.
But given the opportunity where I think that is going to make someone uneasy, and this is where you have to go off, I think, your own internal dialogue there, that if you think that's going to make them uncomfortable and you have to go to extreme sneakiness to get the shot, then it might be one that yes. you want to pass on, or at least talk to them first.
Yeah, I mean, really, you have to be honest about your own motives. I mean, we yes. all know what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're trying to get a photo because you think it's kind of salacious, or you feel sorry for the person or something like mm-hmm. that, it's like, dude, you know, check your motives.
Yeah.
But if it's sort of like, hey, this person knows they're outrageous and doesn't give a damn, take a couple of photos.
Yeah.
They don't care.
I agree. And if they confront you, this is the other thing too, if they confront you afterwards, let's say they see you taking the shot and they're looking at you, you go, what I say is, you know, I just go, that was a great shot, you know, and smile. And then I wait and yeah. see what they say. Most of the time they go, all right, whatever, you know, and
yeah.
just go about their business. But I'm not going to act like I did not take the photo. That would be the worst thing to do.
Well, that's one of the worst things you can do. The second worst thing is to have a guilty expression.
Right.
Well, because really, you know, you've taken enough pictures of people to know one of the joys of street photography is that if you're doing it right, you really do develop great insights into human behavior,
mm-hmm.
right?
You do.
You can tell when something's about to happen. You can tell this is not somebody I should take a picture of. this is a great photo opportunity. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going about what you're doing with the idea of, hey, look, I'm not out here to harm anybody. I'm not out here to exploit anybody. Yeah, I took a picture. Not what are you going to do about it, but hey, you know, it's a really good picture. Would you like to see it?
I'm with you 100% on this. So we gotta do a little bit of a wrap here, but before we do, I mean, do you have any parting thoughts that, you know, something we didn't cover? Do you have a favorite tip of yours when you're out working?
Two quick things.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, don't be creepy. And the other thing is, do not exploit other people. Maybe a lot of listeners are familiar with a website that shows pictures of people in Walmart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like a cheap little thing of like, oh, look at this fat person. Look at this person. Mm. Huh? It makes me very uncomfortable because, number one, people who don't know any better associate that with street photography.
Mm.
It's not street photography.
Mm-hmm.
It's people going in and taking pictures of people who basically I think they want to make fun of or think are pathetic and show them on the internet.
Yeah.
They're exploiting these people. I mean, some of these folks could be mentally ill. Some of these people could be having all kinds of problems. So you get what I'm saying? Don't exploit people.
Don't exploit people. That's, you know, write that on your wrist.
Yeah, I mean, because really it's a golden rule thing. How
it is. It is. Yet another thing, though.
In terms of just being on the street,
mm-hmm.
I you can probably relate to this. You have to find a kind of a comfort zone so that you can be there but not be there.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in Philadelphia, I could be standing on the street and I have a camera, but I'm just standing on the street with a camera. People may notice me, they may not. I'll stand there for like 4 or 5 minutes. Maybe the first 30 seconds, people might be, oh, there's a guy with a camera. But then they forget about me and I become invisible. Really, I think if you work at it, you will find a way to blend into your surroundings. Now, granted, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you if you're 6'7".
Yeah, but you know what? It still works. To your point, it still works. And I used to even tell people this when I shot weddings. I go, you know, after 30 minutes or so, you won't even know that I'm there. And of course, this is the meeting beforehand. And they're all going, oh, ha, 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 ha. How could we forget about you? You're 6'7". And doggone it, if afterwards when I'm showing them shots, they go, when did you take that?
How did you get it?
And I go, I was standing right next to you. And you become invisible. And it is something that, to your point, if it's something that you're striving for, if you know, again, if your energy is good and you're there for good reasons and your intentions are good and you're not dressed in a red suit, hold your ground and just hang out and be cool and people will forget all about you. It's the craziest thing.
You are absolutely right. And yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you have to experience it yourself to really mm-hmm. know, but it's true. You know, if you feel like I belong here, I'm part mm-hmm. of the scenery, you are.
Absolutely. And pretty soon, in all honesty, you just become a lamppost. That is a good reminder, because I think the way that it works is you hit on it. You have to feel comfortable yourself. Once you do, then the environment becomes comfortable with you.
Apropos of that, I would say that, you know, to somebody who wants to kind of get into it, get to know the city you're in. I mean, you know, walk around, get to know the neighborhoods, get a feel. It's like, when are there the most people on the streets? Mm-hmm. What areas do you feel least comfortable in? What areas do you feel most comfortable in? When is a good time of day when there are other people on the street other than, you know, just you as a photographer? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and wear appropriate clothing, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in a poor neighborhood dressed like either an officer of the law or somebody who is, ostentatiously wealthy. This is not a place to wear your Rolex.
It is. And I see on the Golden Gate Bridge, I see the people coming during the summer in their shorts and their t-shirt crossing the Golden Gate Bridge. Well, that is like one of the coldest spots in the world in July. And you really stand out. I mean, really stand out.
But the flip side is, if you're going to go to the beach, well, then by all means, have on a t-shirt and some shorts.
Yes, exactly. Where can people, do you have something going online, Gordon? You know, where can people find out more about you?
As I mentioned, if you go to Google mm-hmm. and enter Shutterfinger, you'll find my blog, which has been on hiatus because I was working on the book, but I'll start that up shortly. But there's still plenty of articles on street photography you can read.
Awesome.
I also have an online portfolio on Zenfolio, and that's also under the name of Shutterfinger. And the title of the book is Street Photography, The Art of Capturing the Candid Moment.
That's great. And I really, really enjoyed the conversation and appreciate having you on the show. I hope we get to talk again, Gordon.
I hope so, too. And next time I'm in the West Coast, I'll look you up, man.
Please do. Please do. All right. Take care.
You too. Thanks a lot.
See, I told you. It's pretty good stuff, wasn't it? I really dig this guy. And by the way, speaking of his book, Street Photography, you can win a copy of it. Rocky Nook has a giveaway going. And I have the link in the show notes. And all you got to do is click on the link. It's one of those things where you enter your name and your email. You'll go on their mailing list, but that's not a bad thing, believe me, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens, and they don't abuse the privilege, and they don't share it with other people. But you have a chance to win a copy of this book, and it's really worth it. And if you don't win a copy, go over to Rocky Nook and take a look at it. I think he did a great job, and you can tell by what he said in this interview that this guy really has a great approach to street photography. That's Gordon Lewis, and I was really happy to have him on the show today. Story number two, from the screening room. Yes, we are strolling over to the screening room right now, and we're going to talk with someone else who I really like, which is David Hobby. David Hobby, known as the Strobist, a longtime photojournalist. And he has a title out called The Traveling Photographer, London with David Hobby. There's a theme to today's show. Are you kind of sensing that a little bit? So anyway, David goes to London and he talks about taking pictures there, talks about, you know, for those of us that are Americans working in Great Britain, has all sorts of just wonderful stuff to share. I mean, David's knowledge is fantastic. And, you know, he's the guy that I think really brought back flash photography, made it cool again. And so, you know, his techniques are good. But like Gordon, David just has a good head on his shoulders. And when he talks about stuff, it makes sense. And you go, yes, yes, David, I see what you're saying. So anyway, he is our Screen Reading Room selection for this week. And all you have to do is go over to our landing page there at lynda.com, which is lynda.com/thedigitalstory. You'll have David's selection there waiting for you, and you'll have access to all the other titles. You can start your 7-day free trial there if you want to get serious about learning something, whether it's David's stuff or one of the other 3,000 topics that are in there. I have a few trainings in there that are pretty good too. And you can just go crazy for a week. You can take care of all of that over at lynda.com/thedigitalstory. And this week's selection is The Traveling Photographer, London with David Hobby. Okay, let's do a little virtual camera club news here. Sizzlepix is having a sale. It's their spring sale. Boy, spring is a great time for sales. You know what I think happens? You know, they go through the holidays because everyone's having specials right now. I mean, I just got some jeans for like 40% off at Eddie Bauer. everyone has specials right now. I think what happens is, you know, the Christmas thing was over and then all the retailers go through a few months sort of business as normal and they just get bored with it. And they go, you know what? We need to liven stuff up. We need to have a sale. And springtime seems like a great time to do it because everyone's doing it, including Sizzlepix right now. And this is a great one. Take 20% off an order of one Sizzlepix or 25% off of two or more when they're shipped together. In other words, when you place the orders together. And the two or more is especially important because guess what we're coming into? We're coming into graduation, Mother's Day, Father's Day, all that stuff that's going on. If you want to give a Sizzlepix, which is a fantastic gift, because it's not only your image that's going to warm the cockles of their heart, it's also this amazing display of your image on polished aluminum that will just knock their socks off. You want to do it now. You don't want to wait. You know, this is not like a Mother's Day thing where, you know, you are scribbling a card out before you head to your mom's house and, you know, stopping by the gas station to pick up some flowers. You know, it's not that kind of thing. You gotta, yes, I know you've done that. You've got to do it a little ahead of time. Now would be a good time. If you do it, you can get 20% off one or 25% off two. And all you have to do is use TDS April. Put that in the comments field. TDS April, and that'll get you 25% off on two or 20% off on one. Sizzlepix, it's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. Longtime sponsor of the Digital Story, SizzlePix.com. And let's close today with the good friends at Red River Paper. Did you see that article I put on the Digital Story about my Cars of Cuba project? Oh, God, it was just a great project. I picked 7 of the images of car shots that I photographed in Cuba, and I made a note card set of them, and I've been printing them out, so I've got all these note card sets everywhere, and they're for sale, by the way, in the Nimble Photographer store if you want to score a set. But it was just a fantastic project. It was very fulfilling, really made me feel like I had a piece of artwork to hand to somebody else. I used Red River paper on it. I used the Greenpix Red River paper, which is they're made from recycled stock. And so it's totally green and it's totally fantastic. I used the 75-pound version of Greenpix. It's got this great weight. It feels so nice and beefy. It's made out of recycled paper and it looks fantastic. And it has my artwork on it. This is the kind of stuff you can do with Red River paper. They have a tie on all the pages of the Digital Story, longest running sponsor of the podcast, and they have a rockin' Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's gonna do it for me this week. I've got more cool stuff I'm already working on for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.